At the end of this month, nations from around the world will gather in Paris to address the difficult issues raised by climate change. While every part of the planet is affected by the global increase in temperature, some Pacific Island nations fear that they'll be uninhabitable by the end of this century as sea level rises. So the issue is especially critical for our region. News analyst Neil Conan will be in Paris to cover the conference in his Pacific News Minutes and in conversations with us. But for now, he's on the line from his macnut farm on the Big Island, as he is most Tuesdays. Good morning. And how's your French?
Bonjour, Beth Ann.
Bonjour.
It's been a long time since high school, but I'm not completely lost as long as we stay in the present tense.
Well, speaking of the present tense, for a long time, the effects of climate change seemed like something in the distant future, but we really know it's here and now.
Absolutely. Ocean levels rise as the water warms and the ice caps melt. Warmer water fuels more and more powerful storms. Weather patterns shift, so some places are wetter and others, California suffers drought.
These United Nations conferences on climate change haven't always gone well. I mean, thinking back to how the United States rejected the protocols adopted in Kyoto, the follow-up meeting in Copenhagen is pretty much widely regarded as a failure. So what do you think the prospects are for Paris?
Improved, but it's far from clear that it's going to be enough. There have been any number of meetings to prepare for Paris, and there's been a major change in the method of how this conference is going to operate. The previous approach was very much top-down. We set a worldwide goal and then established limits on each country's carbon emissions to reach that goal. Now, this failed for any number of reasons. To name just one, big developing countries like China and India said they should be exempt while they work to bring their people out of poverty, while big developed countries like the United States then said, well, why do we have to accept limits to hurt our economies when major polluters like India and China don't have to do anything?
Okay, so you mentioned a difference that might be happening this time. What would it be?
Well, each country has been asked to come up with a plan of its own. There's still a global goal. The issues of developing countries versus the developed countries haven't gone away by any means. But this is more bottom-up, so it feels less like limits are being imposed by this, distant international meeting. And two other things have changed as well. I mentioned all the meetings in the run-up to Paris. None was more important than the summit meeting last year between President Obama and President Xi Jinping of China, when China agreed for the first time to set a date by which it will cap carbon emissions. It now looks like it may stop increasing its carbon output before 2035, but as its economy is slowing down a little bit, and whether that's enough is going to be a big question. But at that agreement, for the first time, puts China, a major player, in the game for the first time.
You just mentioned two factors. What's the other one?
The other one, I think, is time. Things have gotten worse, measurably worse. The data matches the models the scientists projected, and we've passed a couple of milestones, I guess. Carbon now regularly makes up more than 400 parts per million of the atmosphere. That's a measurement taken up at Mauna Loa, by the way. It's a real tipping point for climate change. Just yesterday, the Met, the meteorological office in Britain, published an estimate that the Earth has now warmed by 1 degree Celsius since the start of the Industrial Revolution. In other words, since human activity started to change the climate. That can fluctuate. 2015 looks set to be the warmest year on record. 2016 might be cooler, so you go down below that one degree, but the trend is unmistakable.
Now, the goal is to limit global warming to less than 2 degrees Celsius. Do the plans that the U.S. and other countries have come up with, do they meet that goal?
No, they don't. The estimate, and you have to emphasize here, particularly this is an estimate, there's a big fudge factor here. Mm-hmm. But the estimate is that if everybody holds strictly to the plans that they've submitted to the U.N., the world would warm something like 2.5 degrees Celsius by the end of this century.
Half a degree here or there doesn't sound like much, but that's not the case, is it?
No, it has huge effects. You're absolutely right. The enormous ice sheets on top of Greenland and Antarctica are melting from the inside out. More and more of that ice is going to slide into the ocean. Water already expands as it warms anyway. That ice adds to it. You see places like Kiribati in the Marshall Islands, countries where the highest elevation is 9 or 10 feet above sea level. Kiribati says whatever agreement comes out in Paris is going to come too late for them. Their islands are going to be underwater by the end of the century no matter what. Other island states say they will go under unless the world holds the increase to 1.5 degrees Celsius and makes that legally binding.
So you really see how this is going to affect people in the area. Neighbors who live in low-lying atolls, people have been coming to Hawaii because of that. What about volcanic islands like Hawaii, though?
Well, just look at the topography. Most people tend to live in low-lying areas near the water. So any problems you may have now with sewer systems and storm drainage and tidal flooding, I know Honolulu never has any of that, all of that's going to get worse. Warm water has bleached a lot of the coral on our reefs this summer. That's 30% in some places. Now, that's El Nino as well, but scientists believe that these patterns play into each other, that generally warmer water makes the El Nino both longer and more powerful.
I want to take you back to something you said also a moment ago, that legally, you know, this could be legally binding. If there is an agreement in Paris, how is this going to be enforced?
Oh, that's a good question. There is no global authority to do this. There's no, international climate court. Each country is going to be asked to commit to make its part of the deal legally binding on itself. And you immediately see major problems. In this country, for example, is a Republican-controlled Congress going to embrace a deal negotiated by President Obama that they say will be a job killer? And now that's just the United States. And even if countries do commit, what happens the next time there's an economic downturn and they decide that they need to juice up the economy? What happens in the next change of government?
Okay, but this is a whole lot bigger than just low-lying Pacific islands. Well, of course, they're the most dramatically affected. What do they want, and what are they going to hope for as you go to find this out when you go to Paris?
Absolutely. We're going to talk a lot about this once we get to Paris. But what they've said individually and through organizations like the Association of Small Island States, that in addition to lowering the goal to 1.5 degrees Celsius, they need money to help them adapt. A lot of atolls, for example, as one side of an island erodes, the ocean will deposit sand on the other side, so you might have the same amount of land, but it's suddenly in a different place. They need help with agriculture as soil becomes contaminated with salt. Eventually, some are going to need a new place to live. So are rich countries like Australia and New Zealand and the United States and Japan, are they going to accept people as climate migrants? What happens to the language and culture of those islands when a nation is forced to relocate its people? Do they all live in the same place anymore? Do you retain your nationality if your nation sinks beneath the waves? Does that nation still have fishing and mineral rights in its territorial waters if it's underwater? Does it still have a seat in the United Nations? Is it still a nation? All of these are really major questions that remain unanswered.
And then we'll see what attempts at getting some answers to that you'll bring back for us after you go to Paris. But we're going to try to talk to you while you're there. Won't be next week because you'll be in transit. And so have a good and safe trip, and we'll talk to you the next time we can.
Bienvenue.
And also have a really wonderful and safe trip, too. Take care, Neil.
We'll see you, Bethany.
Neil Conant is a regular contributor to HPR with the Pacific News Minute. It's part of his ongoing radio career, now originating from his Hawaii Island macadamia farm and from Paris in the next week or two. ¶¶